couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. This week, we're going to be talking about Dolphin Tale 2 and The Drop, No Good Deeds, which has a really interesting story behind it. We'll get to that in a little bit. We're also going to talk about Atlas Shrugged, who is John Galt, and Life After Beth. There's also going to be news in the trailer park, some listener feedback, box office predictions, and of course the world-famous DVD roundup. But before we get into all of that, this is how you can get in touch with me. You can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Rest in peace to Richard Kiel. He died at age 74. Some people don't recognize the name necessarily. You are absolutely recognize the face. He was most famous for playing the Bond villain Jaws, the henchman, the giant guy with the big metal teeth. It was in The Spy Who Loved Me and in Moonraker. He was in EGA, which is an old terrible movie that was made in the 50s and resurrected by Mystery Science Theater. He was also in the original To Serve Man episode of The Twilight Zone. He played the tall aliens that had the book To Serve Man. He died of natural causes, and it's a real shame to see him go. I mean, 74, he was like 3 days shy of his 75th birthday. But he will be missed, and I'm probably going to have to watch EGA or one of the James Bond movies in honor of him. The next piece of news I want to talk about is the new Batmobile images. Now, this is, of course, for Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice. And this is going to be the Batmobile that Ben Affleck drives around. Again, this is the radio, so obviously I can't show you the pictures, but if you can go to... It's all over the internet. You can find it. Here's the thing, again, that bothers me. This is a whole thing that I'm seeing starting to worry me about this movie. Is this a black and white movie? I mean, I haven't seen a lick of color in anything. Maybe a little bit of gold here or there. But this movie is so desaturated. I mean, the Dark Knight series, Batman Begins, The Dark Knight, and The Dark Knight Rises, they actually had color to them. If you watch the movies, they were very vibrant. Now, of course, Batman's suit was all black, and of course he had the tumbler, which was black. But there was a crispness to the image, and that's what I think I'm missing from these production photos from Zack Snyder's movies. The other thing is the Batmobile just looks like an even more tricked out version of the Tumbler. It's getting almost, we're getting ridiculous. If you remember, the Batmobile for Michael Keaton Batman was cool and sleek, and they just added crap to it as the movies went on until you get to Batman and Robin, where it looked like a children's toy. This one, I think, is getting overblown. I mean, this thing looks like something that an overfunded police department in flyover country is going to buy to just, you know, hand out search warrants, you know, with this militarization of police concern that some people have. Another piece of news, Rambo Last Blood, yes, that's honest to God the name of the movie, is supposed to start filming in October, and I'm totally down with this. You know, I love the resurgence, the old classic Schwarzenegger and Stallone movies, the, you know, revisiting the 80s with these. I'm all for it. I love the last Rambo. I'm curious to see this one. As long as it's not PG-13, as long as they learn their lesson with the Expendables and don't make a PG-13 version of Rambo, I think I'm going to be okay. Now, the final piece of news I want to hit on, movie news, of course, because there's a lot of other regular news, but I don't deal with that nonsense. I talk about the hardcore movie news, the stuff that people really want to know about. Andrew Garfield apparently came out with a response to fans of The Amazing Spider-Man 2. You know, people complained about that movie. It was the worst reviewed of all the Spider-Man movies, including Spider-Man 3. And it was not seen as a well-made movie. And he basically said, I'm not going to go through the long rambling response he had because it was long and rambling. But he basically said it was overworked in post by the studio. He loved the script, but it just kept getting changed and changed, and they took stuff out until they got to where they were. Here's my problem with this. I am so tired of filmmakers, either actors or directors, coming out months, if not years, after a film comes out and then apologizing for the movie. I know, I'm sorry, you're right, this was kind of terrible. You had that with Michael Bay when he talked about Transformers 2, I think, and I think even Steven Spielberg came out and apologized for Crystal Skull. And no, I'm sorry. Make your movie and own it and be proud of it. Especially if it's a tentpole release. You have all the money in the world. Now, if you're some independent film that can't pay people more than gas money and food, and you're shooting on weekends with borrowed equipment, and people are maybe showing up or not showing up, and there's tons of problems that you can deal with in independent film. God knows I've done it. But if you've got a $200 million movie, there's no excuse. It's intellectually dishonest. I think it may be true, but it's intellectually dishonest to blame the studio because the studio had too heavy of a hand in the filmmaking. Because that's exactly what Marvel does over at Disney. Marvel is completely in control. They got to approve everything, and it's going to be the same way with Star Wars. Maybe Sony's botching this, but you can't sit there and say, oh, well, it's studio control. I think what it is you had a director, Mark Webb, who didn't know how to work with the studio. Ultimately, quit apologizing. If you have plenty of time while making the movie to stop and say, this is bad. Recognize it's bad when you're making a movie, not 3 months after it, or 6 months, or a year or two after making the movie, and then coming out and apologizing. You think it makes you sound good, it really makes you sound incompetent, because what it shows is you don't know how to do your job when it's time to do your job. It's my job to say, this is crap, in retrospect, after it's been made. That's my job. Your job is to make the movie. And if you can't recognize that it's crap while you're making it, you need a new job. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move on into the trailer park. All right, two movies I want to talk about. These both come out in October. The first one is Dracula Untold, the quote-unquote true story of Vlad Tepes, how he becomes a vampire. It opens on October 10th. Here you go.
They're almost here. I want the power to save my people, save my family.
Your salvation is in the dark and all its power. You will have the strength of 100 men.
There's no turning back.
And dominion over the night and all its creatures.
At what price?
You have no idea.
This movie looks like it's going to be better than I, Frankenstein, although I don't have a whole lot of faith in this film. It looks not too good, I guess you could say. I don't have a problem with the people in it. It just looks like it's going to be another one of these overproduced historical epics. We had a bunch in like January and February, like Legends of Hercules, Pompeii, and recently we had Hercules, the Rocks Hercules. Yeah, I'm kind of expecting it to be kind of terrible. The reality is Vlad Tepes was not a vampire. That was something that was created by Bram Stoker when he wrote Dracula, because he named himself, he was part of the House of Dracul, which was a dragon, and that gave that name. I thought that Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula handled it well in sort of showing Vlad Tepes as a prince and a ruthless warrior. Because if you know anything about him, this guy was not a nice person. He was well known for doing horrible things that he did to his enemies and just the villagers. Yeah, I'm they're so flopping around with the history on this one that it looks like it's going to be this big sort of effects production. It might be okay. The only reason I really support it is because it's a horror movie in October. And I'm all for horror movies in October. I think we get away from them. And we've gotten away from them when they have Saw, where Saw was just clearing the road and nobody else wanted to compete with it. And now we've got Annabelle coming out and we've got Dracula Untold. So at least we got horror movies that are at least an appropriate time and not in August or January. The next movie I want to just highlight real quick is Fury, which opens on October 17th.
I had the best gunner in the army in that seat. Now I got you. I promised my crew a long time ago I'd keep them alive.
These troops get by you, we're all dead in the water. All we got is you.
I need you to perform. He kills you, or you kill him.
I can't do it!
Yes, you can.
Light him up!
This is, of course, the Brad Pitt tank movie. It's a World War II movie. It's, I'm sure, going to be attempting award consideration. It's a little early for the award films, sort of like something like when they did Prisoners last year. A very different movie, obviously. It looks interesting. I'm curious to see it because it looks like it's like a submarine movie where you got everybody in the submarine and seeing what they do. This could be really good. This could be intense. It could be action, but it could also be long and drawn out and boring. I don't know. The trailer looks pretty cool, so I am looking forward to that. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Drop and No Good Deeds.
Thank you.
Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, coming at you and going to be talking about the movies for this weekend. The first one I want to talk about is The Drop. It's in limited release, and it is James Gandolfini's one of his final roles. And it's a real shame, just real before we even get into this. It's a real shame because he started to really kind of diversify, and even though this is sort of a, it deals with crime, but he's not playing Tony Soprano in it. And, you know, you had this, you could have had this 1-2 punch with this and Enough Said, where Enough Said he was totally playing against type. And he was really doing something different. And it's a shame that he had to die right when he was sort of finding himself in a new career, finding a new resurgence in his career. I think he could have gone on to do some great things, but unfortunately he passed away. Anyways, we're going to be talking about The Drop here. In this film, two men run a bar in Brooklyn associated with the Chechen mob, and they begin to worry when it looks like someone's going to rob them.
In Brooklyn, money changes hands all night long. And it's not the kind of money that you can deposit in a bank.
You hand over The Drop.
But all that money needs to end up somewhere. They call it a drop bar. You just hide the entire city's dirty money right in plain sight.
All your money in the bag.
Do you know whose money you're jacking?
Fill the bag!
You don't see anything?
Nah. You know, that's this neighborhood.
This is by the same guy who wrote Gone Baby Gone. It's a real slow burn kind of movie. If you remember, Gone Baby Gone was very much like that. But it holds together a little bit better. It moves at a better pace, even though it is a slow burn. It doesn't seem to really drag for me. I really enjoyed the pacing of the movie. It also has fantastic acting in it. James Gandolfini does a great job. Again, playing a Tony Soprano type who is, he's sort of like the lion that's lost his teeth. And he still has the bluster of Tony Soprano, but he just doesn't have the power of Tony Soprano. And that's, I think, a bit of a stretch for him. And that's why this is one of his better performances I've seen on screen in movies. A lot of times they just, especially when he was in The Sopranos, they just brought him in to play the heavy. Well, in this movie, he's playing something other than the heavy, which is kind of good. I think that's, he's kind of the former heavy and the guy who has trouble. And he's a real tragic character in this. It also stars Tom Hardy, and Tom Hardy's great in it. Tom Hardy plays a very soft-spoken, a very quiet guy with mystery behind him, but also just guy wanting to mind his own business. And they're sort of caught in the middle of this attempted robbery of the Chechen money. And that is, you know, it opens up a dangerous window for them. It also stars Noomi Rapace in a role. And I love Noomi Rapace. I think she's adorable. I think she's rough at times, but still a very beautiful woman. And I think she can play the darker character, even as adorable and cute as she is, she plays dark really, really well. And we've seen, obviously, if you've seen The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the original in that series, you know she can play dark. I think it's a good movie. And, you know, is it going to get Oscar consideration? I don't know. Again, it's opening a little early. It's a Fox Searchlight movie. And they like to roll their stuff out kind of early. And sometimes it works for them. It worked for 12 Years a Slave. I don't think that this is powerful enough to rise to the level that everyone's going to remember it come award season. I think it's going to get lost in the shuffle. There's some bigger, heavier, stronger movies. Now, maybe James Gandolfini is going to get some notice because, like I said, it's one of his final films. It's one of the last films he worked on. But yeah, I don't know if that's necessarily going to translate to any sort of award consideration. But overall, I'm going to say that The Drop rocks. I'm going to give it an actual full-on rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about, now this is a great story. No Good Deeds. Not the movie's not a great story. There's a great story behind No Good Deeds. I'm just going to go play the trailer real quick and then talk about it. A woman faces a home invasion from an escaped convict who threatens her children.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to bother you. I just lost control of my car and a rack ticket.
Are you all right?
I'm good. Do you think I could use your phone?
Do you live around here?
Yeah, over on River Road. Mommy. I don't even need to come in. I'll stand right here. You can hand the phone and shut the door.
Mommy!
Hey, let's do it. Let's go. And up to the sky!
Whoa. Put her down!
Please.
Please work.
You want to do it.
Here's the point where I'm going to pull the veil back a little bit. I'm going to give you a little bit of inside baseball. And I talk about this every now and then. Normally, I talk about the movies and strictly about the movies. And I want to talk about the behind the scenes of this one in particular because it's kind of fascinating to me. If you don't know how this stuff works, when they make a movie, they show it to audiences and they have screenings ahead of it. Usually that's the general case. And they do it for word of mouth. They want people to see the movie and say, oh, and they get in for free. They see the movie and they're like, oh, that was a good movie. And they hope to go home and tell their friends. Those are called word of mouth screenings. Now, a lot of times will arrange for press to show up at those. It is not uncommon, and every studio does it, some more than others, but it is not uncommon to have screenings that the press are not invited to because for various reasons, they may be worried that it's going to get bad reviews or they don't want people writing about it. And you can't put a gag order on somebody, just an average person walking off the street to go see a movie. But for me, I have to do what the studios say, because if I violate a gag order and talk about a movie before I'm allowed to, they're going to say, guess what? You're not invited to any more press screenings. And it can jeopardize my job. Now, No Good Deed is released by Screen Gems. And Screen Gems has a bit of a reputation for not always releasing the best movies. Although I tend to like a lot of their movies. One of the ones they did Think Like a Man 2. I thought that was kind of clever. They did Quarantine. They've done some decent movies. They've done some crap, but everybody has. Well, they scheduled screenings all over the nation for all cities for No Good Deed. And it was supposed to take place midweek. And like less than 24 hours before they happened, suddenly Sony, the parent company, decided, we're canceling the screenings everywhere. And the reason they gave was because there's a twist ending they didn't want to reveal. Which I'm like, well, the greatest way to tell people to look for a twist ending is to literally send out a press release that says there's a twist ending, so we're not going to let you see the movie. I mean, talk about dumb. The reality is, I don't think it had anything to do with the twist ending. Some people have suggested that the football player Ray Rice with the domestic violence issues with him, that they didn't want to have, because it stars Idris Elba and Taraji P. Henson, both African American. Well, he's not African American; he's English, but two black people. I don't know if that's the case. I really don't think. I think it's just that it's a crappy movie. It's probably a bad film. It's probably not very well done. And they probably had early test screenings. And I've seen this happen. They've had early test screenings and people just didn't get a good response. It didn't get a good word of mouth. So they canceled the screenings. Well, unfortunately, the only thing worse than not screening a movie is saying you're going to screen a movie and then pulling it. And I'm sure that the big twist at the ending is it's a terrible movie and it's not worth your money to go see. So not only did they not screen it, but they didn't have like Thursday night shows. A lot of times what they do is they'll release a movie, like you can get an 8 or 10 or even a midnight show on Thursday night. That's kind of the way things go now. Now with push button projection system, you don't have to have a professional projectionist there. Anybody with a finger can just say, bleep, okay, start this movie. They're all automated now. So that's why you have so many of these late night screenings on Thursday. They didn't even do those. And that's not a good sign. Here's a movie where they're terrified of what people are going to say. I think they've done themselves no favor, because I've just spent 4 minutes talking about how the studio doesn't want people, me or an audience, to see the movie. The last time I remember this happening was Vampire Academy back in this past winter. The Weinsteins would not allow Thursday night shows. And the movie ended up bombing because nobody went to go see it, because the people who wanted to see it weren't allowed to go see it. So this is a bad sign. It might do okay, but I'm sure it's a terrible movie. So it gets a preemptive suck. I don't give these out much anymore because I usually get a good shot at seeing the movies.
It sucks.
All right, I need to go to a break. When I come back, we're going to be talking about Dolphin Tale 2 and Atlas Shrugged. Who is John Galt?
Oh, despicable me.
Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr at the helm, ready to roll into the next two films to talk about. The first one I want to talk about is probably going to be the biggest one of the weekend, is Dolphin Tale 2. Winter the Dolphin is suffering from depression from the loss of her companion and must find a new one or face being taken from the aquarium.
Your female bottlenose, Winter.
She's not doing well, Clay.
No one's allowed back here. Winter's not feeling very well.
Did she ever come out?
Not much. It's hard to even coax her out to eat.
You ever try bacon? It works with my cat.
Winter needs to be paired with another female, and soon. I'm giving you 30 days to correct the problem.
Hey guys, Marine Fisheries just picked up a stranding. Clay, it's a female.
I was not a huge fan of the first Dolphin Tale, and there was really nothing bad about that movie. It's just, it was so gosh darn corny. It's just so cheesy and so schmaltzy. This one's very much the same way. I didn't find it as sickeningly sweet at times, as goofy, and maybe I was just used to it. I knew what I was getting into. But I guess these are kind of forgivable. That's a forgivable thing for a movie like this. Why? Because it's a kid's movie. At its heart, it's a family movie. It's not a kid's movie where it's dumbed down and, you know, it's goofy cartoon characters or anything like that. It's a movie about saving animals, and that connects with kids. Now, they brought the entire cast back from the first one, which was 3 years ago. The kid, Nathan Gamble, who plays Sawyer, I think is his name, in the film, of course, he's 3 years older, and his friend at the aquarium, who's a girl, she's 3 years older, so you're facing them growing up. But so ultimately, you have older kids in the movie. You don't have the little kids. Nathan Gamble was a lot younger, obviously, when he made the first one. But I think they all work together. They brought the entire cast back. You've got like Harry Connick Jr. and Ashley Judd and Morgan Freeman and Kris Kristofferson all coming back to play the same roles that they had in the previous film. It is very much the same kind of movie where it's got some peril, but it's not too dangerous or scary. It's got its heart in the right place. It's a very wholesome, sweet movie. It gets kind of corny and cheesy at times. But like I said, I don't think it reaches that level because the story of Winter, the dolphin, who is actually in the movie, the real dolphin Winter, whose tail was destroyed by a fishing net and she had no tail. So she had to learn to swim differently. And that was causing stress on her spine and giving her problems, and they created a prosthetic tail to make her swim better. Now, they couldn't release her in the wild with this thing, so she's eternally going to be in captivity. But the whole point of this hospital is to rescue and rehabilitate and then release the animals into the wild. So it's a movie about just, it gets a little bit into sort of like the nuts and bolts of how one of these aquariums would work. It's directed by Charles Martin Smith, who is in the movie. He plays the guy from the USDA. But he's also, the guy who directed Trick or Treat back in the 80s, the Ozzy Osbourne hard metal rock horror movie, which I said to a friend of mine, it's essentially the same film. But it's a sweet, adorable, fun little movie that kids are going to like. I think parents can enjoy it. Its biggest sin is that it's too long. It runs close to 2 hours. And probably with the trailers, you know, if you go to a movie and it starts at 2:30, you're not going to get out of there until 4:30 or later. And that's its biggest problem, is it just runs a bit long. But overall, if you like the first one, if you like Dolphin Tale, you're going to like this one. It's virtually you could edit these movies together. They look the same. They feel the same. They have the same cast. Some of them get a little older, but otherwise I think fans of the first one are going to like this one, and it's very sweet. And the first one came out in September and was a good September movie because it gives parents something to take their kids to that they can also enjoy on the weekend. So I'm going to say that Dolphin Tale 2 actually kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about, in a somewhat similar way to No Good Deed, is Atlas Shrugged. Who is John Galt? The third installment in Ayn Rand's classic novel is brought to life for the big screen.
Agnew, we are on strike. This is a strike of our minds.
You quit. All of you did.
We had to withdraw.
But what about what you left behind? Unlike you, I don't believe in abandoning the fight. When's the first time you saw me?
I remember that well. You were standing on the Taggart passenger platform. If your shawl had slipped any further down, you'd have been standing there naked. I want you here. But you could choose to stay or go.
As long as I am alive, I will not desert a battle that is mine to fight.
This is also one I did not get a chance to see because it wasn't screened and it wasn't shown on Thursday nights. I think for different reasons than No Good Deed. Because this one's a very small company. It's almost kind of the people running these Atlas Shrugged movies are just kind of doing them all themselves, and they're not running through a major studio. They have to distribute them themselves, which is a lot more complicated if you don't have the infrastructure and the system in place to do it. So that's probably why they didn't get like Thursday night screenings, because they weren't able to book the theaters for that. But it did start on the weekend. It did start on Friday. They didn't do press screenings, but they didn't do press screenings for the other two Atlas Shrugged movies. And I wouldn't expect them to, because in general, the press does not like these movies. There's some political ideology about that, but I think the biggest problem that these movies have faced is they're just not terribly well made. And that's a shame, because Ayn Rand's book is a classic novel, and it's a bestseller, and it's really something that should have been given a better treatment. It's an unfilmable book in a lot of ways. It's very dense, and it's very long. And what is it, the John Galt speech in the end of the book? Isn't it? I think if you read it, it's I forget how many pages, but I think they, if you go to YouTube, you can find the speech read, and it's like 3 hours long, just for the speech. This is not light reading. You know, the original Atlas Shrugged. The movies themselves were not very well done. And there's a massive irony around these films, because Ayn Rand was a full-on capitalist. She believed in the free market. And these films have been resoundingly rejected by the free market. The first one, like, did very, I remember the first one had really good numbers its first weekend because it was in very limited release. And that's easy to do if it's a movie that has a high demand on a small audience. You can put it in theaters, then everybody comes to those, you know, five theaters around the country, and you can get high numbers there. But the second you expand it to 100 or 200 or 500 or 1,000, you dilute your audience immediately. And then it plays to empty houses. And I think that's what happened. And I'm not saying that there's even a political reason behind why the first two movies didn't do well and didn't get, I think it's just they were not well made. They had cheesy special effects. They were poorly constructed. And to do the, I remember the first movie, it's a lot of people sitting around talking to each other over tables. It's really, that's like 80 to 90% of the film. The other problem that these movies have, because they're not successes, they keep getting actors in them and leaving. I mean, Dagny Taggart is played by three different people by this time. The first one was Taylor Schilling, who most people now will know her from Orange is the New Black. And then they had Samantha Mathis play her in the second one, and they got this woman, Laura Reagan, I think, is playing her. And it's a good thing there's only three movies they can make, because, I mean, they're going to have, you know, some homeless woman playing her in the net, because they just keep getting the lower and lower celebrity. Same thing with John Galt. This is the third guy who's played John Galt. They had D.B. Sweeney play John Galt in the second film. But in this one, it's just some other guy. And from what I can tell of the trailer, because again, they didn't screen this and they didn't have early showings of this, it just looks even lower rent than the other two. They spent a lot of money on the first one hoping to get the whole series, and that didn't pan out. You know, hey, if you're a fan of the films, more power to you. Go find it. It's out in theaters now, so you can go check it out. But I don't think you're going to win anybody over. I also find it curious that they are calling it Atlas Shrugged, Who is John Galt, not Atlas Shrugged 3. Mainly probably because they probably shot it to be standalone. And also, they didn't want it to feel like it was a third movie when nobody's seen the other two. I'm not even going to render a verdict on this, because I don't blame them for not screening it for us. But yeah, that is out, so you can go check it out. But it's some interesting behind the scenes, inside baseball, on both No Good Deed and Atlas Shrugged. I need to go to a break. When we come back, we've got a review of Life After Beth and some listener feedback and the box office and the DVD roundup. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys in the Movies, wrapping things up, coming to an end. It was my birthday this week. My birthday's on September 11th, which is always difficult to talk about because, I mean, it's a natural tragedy. You know, what happened in September 11th, 2001 was horrible, and it's significant. And before that, I can assure you that September 11th was a completely innocuous day. because that was my birthday. And it's too late to be in Labor Day. Kids are back at school. It's too early to be Halloween. So it's just kind of this innocuous day. And then suddenly September 11th, 2001 happened. And I always feel bad when I'm like, well, my birthday's on September 11th. Because, I mean, what am I going to do? Sit there and complain that my birthday's been co-opted? 3,000 people died that day. I mean, I can deal with the fact that people aren't going to focus on me for a day. So it was interesting. But I'll just tell you, my birthday, what I did is I went to a Indian buffet that I like in town for lunch. Then I came home and I took a nap. That's it. But you know what? It was like the greatest birthday ever. This is what happens when you get old. You know, when you're a kid, you want to have a party and you want to go out dancing. You want to go to bars and see your friends. For me, eat at a buffet, go home and take a nap. Apparently, I'm 86 years old now. But it was a glorious nap. Let me tell you, it was like the greatest nap I've had in the longest time. So I hope to repeat that next year. I hope to repeat that this weekend, actually. All right, let's move on. We got a little bit of listener feedback. We got a question, another question from Thomas from Seattle. This time he gave us a call. If you want to reach us, you can call us at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. Here's Thomas from Seattle and his question.
Hi, Kevin. This is Thomas from Seattle. I was reading something on the movie Blogosphere the other day, and somebody made a reference back to Enid Cool News. And I was just, like, shocked because I had not thought about those guys in, like, you know, a few years at least. They were, like, the big shots in the movie Blogosphere. You know, Harry seemed like he was everywhere. What do you think kind of happened to them?
Well, thank you, Thomas. I'll tell you, I hate to burst your bubble, but Ain't It Cool News is still around, and they're still pretty significant. It's just you don't hear about them in a singular way that you used to. I mean, 15 years ago, they were it. They were the online news magazine. And since then, there have been dozens and dozens. There's several of them that are pretty big. You know, even some I've written for, like Film School Rejects is a big site. But you got stuff like Slash Film and Cinema Blend and Screen Rant. You got a lot of these news sites that have sort of perfected what Ain't It Cool News has done. And I give a lot of credit to Ain't It Cool News. They kind of rally around their wagons. They refuse to change their structure too much, which is wonderful. And that's great because they built a brand and you want to keep that brand. And they still get millions of people coming to their website every month. So they're doing fine. They're there and they still get the scoops, but it's just a lot of other people are getting scoops as well. It's become a crowded marketplace. So Ain't It Cool News is still around. It's still kicking. It's still there. It's just instead of being one voice in the wilderness, it is one voice of many in a crowded city. All right, let's hit on the next movie, which is Life After Beth. This is a zomcom and it stars Aubrey Plaza. After his girlfriend dies from a snake bite, a mourning young man discovers she has come back as a zombie, and he tries to rekindle the relationship.
I'm a mess, Mr. Slocum.
There's just, like, so many things that I wish I had told her.
Me too.
That's the wife!
Okay.
Where is she?
Listen.
She is not dead.
You ate a guy.
Oh, what do you want from me, Zach? I'm a zombie! Zombies eat guys!
So sorry about Beth.
I just, like, kind of wish she'd stay dead.
I want to eat.
Okay, fine. What do you want to eat?
I don't know. What do you want to eat?
What, you think you even want to eat food?
This was a cute enough movie. I mean, I'm a huge fan of zombie comedies. I'm not a big fan of zombie films because I think they've been overdone. But I like zombie comedies. You know, stuff like Shaun of the Dead and Fido. These are fun movies. And I think it mines something really cool out of the zombie genre. So I thought that aspect was kind of cool. It does kind of get a little bit rambling at times. It does get a little unfocused at times. Aubrey Plaza, she does a good job half the time. The other half of the time, she feels like she's not given any direction. She's just sort of stand there and smile awkwardly. And she's a very funny woman, but I think she's an actor who needs to be directed specifically. Or needs to be very comfortable with the role. It just felt like she didn't know where the role was going. It also has a good cast with, like, John C. Reilly and Molly Shannon play her parents. And then the story gets a little bit nonsensical and completely bonkers by the time we get to the end. But, you know, if you're into zombie comedies, you know, we're coming up to October. You can still find this in theaters. You can also find it on demand. So, yeah, Life After Beth, I'm going to be nice. I'll give it a kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Last week, and I said that Guardians of the Galaxy was going to make $10 million. I was right on the nose with that one. It was the one that won the weekend, and it won the weekend with a scant $10 million, and that's still good. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy is a great movie. That's wonderful that is doing that. The one that I think is even more significant, Let's Be Cops is creeping up there. Let's Be Cops made $5.5 million. It's at like $68 million now. It's a bona fide hit. It's almost more profitable than something like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles because it only cost $17 million to make. The Identical bombed horribly. It came in at number 12 with like $1.5 million. They were hoping, they were expecting it to make like four or five. It didn't even make that. They expected it to make $1.5 million on its first day. It didn't even make that. It's a terrible performance, just awful performance. Even worse, though, was Innocence, which came in at 33rd. It made $480 per screen. That's just awful. It is a terrible movie. Nobody cared about this movie. Nobody saw it. Statistically, nobody saw it. Forrest Gump didn't do terribly well. It made $380,000. Innocence made $235,000. These are terrible numbers for, especially as wide as, I think Innocence was in like 500 screens. And Forrest Gump was in like over 300. I think that's just because Forrest Gump isn't the kind of movie you need to see on the big screen. You can see it all the time. It's kind of lame. This weekend, I think that Dolphin Tale is actually going to win. I think No Good Deeds, The Bad Blood, and it's clearly something that probably doesn't have good word of mouth, I think is going to sink. It's going to be a horse race between Dolphin Tale and No Good Deeds, but I think Dolphin Tale is going to win with $18 million. And that is about it on box office. It's going to be a slow week. And here's that sound. That sound means, of course, we're moving into the world-famous DVD roundup. A couple movies this week that I want to really highlight. Of course, the first one is Captain America, The Winter Soldier, the really quite good sequel to Captain America, The First Avenger. Really neat in the sense that it's sort of that old 70s conspiracy theory movie. And, you know, the hero on the run, I think it's a great way to diversify the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it still opens up some really cool things that can happen. And of course, it's leading into Captain America 3, which should be really good, and it's also leading into Avengers Age of Ultron, because that was the last release. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy was there, but this is the last one of the characters that are going to show up until Age of Ultron. So yeah, that's a really good one to check out. A little thin on special features, but still a good movie to check out. Brick Mansions kind of came and went with a whimper. It was one of Paul Walker's final films, and this actually isn't bad. It's based on District 13, a French film, and it's a parkour movie. It's an action movie about cops going into the worst area of the city. I thought it was pretty decent for just a dumb action movie. Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 1 is also out on DVD. I have to admit, I did break up with this show. I stopped watching on TV, so I haven't finished the season. I hear it got better. And I hear they're going to be doing some cool things. They're going to bring in Agent Carter into the Season 2. So maybe it'll gel and become a good show. But, you know, as it is right now, it's a middling recommendation. Words and Pictures, starring Clive Owen and Juliette Binoche as two teachers at a private school. One is all about pictures because she's an artist, and the other one's about literature because he's a literature teacher, and it's their rocky romance. Dynasty Season 9, if you want to watch the cat fights. They have cat fights in this show. This is actually kind of a fun show. I never really watched it. I wasn't into the primetime soap operas. It's not great, but you know, it's cut from the same cloth as Dallas and Falcon Crest and all that. Supernatural Season 9, Homeland Season 3, and Vampire Diary Season 5 are also available. Stinker of the Week is Here Comes Honey Boo Boo, a very boo Halloween, because Honey Boo Boo, I mean, seriously, this thing's still around? At the very least, it's going to be scary. It's probably going to be the scariest Halloween release out there right now, because it's Honey Boo Boo. This girl's going to be horrifying when she's a teenager. I mean, she is going to be like Lindsay Lohan meets Roseanne Barr. Next week, we're going to be talking about The Maze Runner. This is Where I Leave You, Tusk, and A Walk Among the Tombstones. Until then, folks, have a fat time at the movies.